And we're holding on page 12 in Sanhedrin, the paragraph labeled Shum Mishnah, middle of Horse Yud Beis. The Mishnah says, as it goes through the different numbers of Dayanim that you need for different purposes, the Mishnah said, Ibra Shana B'Shloisha, to declare whether we're going to have a leap year, you need three Dayanim. Divra Meir, that's what a Meir says, three is, that's how it is. Reb Shimon Gamliel Omer, Reb Shimon Gamliel says, Reb Shimon Gamliel is a Nasi, he ought to know, B'Shloisha Maschilin, we do start with three, meaning, so we start, well, we'll explain in a second, we start with three, over Chamisha Nosin V'Nosin, then they continue to discuss the matter with five, V'Goymrim B'Shiva, and they complete it, they finally make the decision, they bring in two more, and then have seven to make the final decision. The Mishnah goes on to say, Reb Shimon Gamliel says, if they decide it with three, then B'Dievet it's M'Ober, but L'Hatchilu they should do it this way. And the idea is, the Gemara explains, in other words, they start with three, and the three of them will vote between themselves, do we even need to consider the matter further? Now, the Gemara goes into a long discussion of what exactly are the various factors that go into declaring a leap year. A little bit of it is going to be here in Ein Yaakov over the next few days, but in any case, so the first thing is, we need three Dayanim to decide, do we even need to consider the matter for this year? And only if two, or only if at least two of them say, or all three of them say, yes, we need to consider it, then we go to the next step. Then we bring in two Dayanim and they start discussing all the pros and cons of it. When is the tekufa? When is how are the crops? How are the baby animals and all the various other factors that the Gemara talks about what they take into consideration. And then if they decide, yes, after all, we do need a leap year, then they bring in two more and then they officially vote on it, and that's it. We're making this coming, this year is going to be a leap year. So the Gemara says, "Hani Gimel Hey V'Zayin Kneged Mi." Well, why these numbers 3, 5, and 7? So the Gemara says, "Pligi Ba Reb Yitzchok Banachmeni B'Chad De'Ime." Reb Yitzchok Banachmeni and another Talmud Chacham, along with him, argued about this. And who is that? Umani Reb Shimon Ben Pazi. Namely, that other one is Reb Shimon Ben Pazi. Va'amilo, others say the other way around. Reb Shimon Ben Pazi, the one who was known was Reb Shimon Ben Pazi, v'chad de'ime, and one with him, umanu Reb Yitzchok Banachmeni, namely Reb Yitzchok Banachmeni. So it could be the different versions are, the one version was from a Talmud of Reb Yitzchok Banachmeni, and therefore he considered his Rebbe to be the more important one, and only Reb Shimon Ben Pazi is by the way, and then, or the other way around. There was a different Gersa, Reb Shmuel Banachmeni, in which case there is an actual dispute who are the two Chachamim. In any case, of these two Chachamim, Chad Omar, one of them says, Keneged Birkas Koyanim, that it corresponds to the Psukim of Birkas Koyanim. You have three words in the first Pasuk, five in the second, seven in the third, and therefore corresponding to that is why we have these numbers when it comes to deciding Ibra Shana. Now, why should that be? What does Birkas Koyanim have to do with Ibra Shana? So there are a variety of different explanations. Maharsha brings that there are 60 letters in Birkas Koyanim, and we talked about the other day that the main members of the Sanhedrin number 60. And that now you have when the Pasuk, so it's like this, the Pasuk describes at the end of Sefer Melachim and at the end of Yirmiyah, it talks about the various dignitaries from the Jewish people who were arrested by Nebuchadnezzar's army and taken to Rivlah, which is where Nebuchadnezzar had his headquarters, and there they were executed. And the Pasuk mentions 60 people from the Am Ha'aretz, which means from the top members of the Sanhedrin. Then you have also, he mentions three Shomer Asaf and seven Roye Pnei Melech. So we're meant to understand that those all represent, between them, you have the 70 members of the Sanhedrin. Then you have, why do you have five of them? There's another pasuk that refers to them as five. So there's so the Yerushalmi who says there were five main ones, and then there were two Sofrei HaDayanim. Later in the Masechta, it talks about the way that the Sanhedrin is set up. You have, there's the actual members of the Sanhedrin themselves, and then you have two court reporters who take down notes of what's being argued and what's being discussed and based in. So therefore, five versus seven. So now the vote would be, in other words, that we have the first three represent then the three dayanim that you need for dinim mominus and gzelus and things like that, where you need a minimum of three dayanim who have smicha, as it talks about at the beginning of the Masechta. So therefore, so you start with that. Then on the other hand, And then you end up, so then you go to 5 and then to 7, representing, again, these higher and higher levels of members of the Sanhedrin, but it also represents, in other words, the whole idea of Birkas Kohanim is Hashem should bless you. Yivarecha Hashem means mamon, v'yishmerecha, and Hashem should protect you against anybody who would attack you. We learned before, we learned about Rav saying when he was going to his base in Shtibel to judge Dinei Torah, how much jeopardy he's putting himself in and how he's not going to make any money from it. So therefore, on the contrary, then we have, when it comes to Ibar Hashana, on the contrary, we have a number of people representing the words of Birkas Kohanim, representing this idea that on the contrary, Hashem will bless us and Hashem will give us all the good that we need, and we'll have plenty of rain. And he goes on in some arichos and explains how the various psukim of Birkas Kohanim all represent the brachas that we're going to have as a result of keeping the mitzvahs properly, and in particular in this case of deciding when leap years should be correct. And Yivarecha and Yishmerecha refer to the different areas of Eretz Yisrael, and he goes into a whole arichos about different details about that. Different other mafreshim talk about a lot of different other ideas what Birkas Kohanim has to do with Ibar Hashana. One of them is somewhat related to that, that it's meant to make sure that the rainy season should be in its proper time and the summer season should be in its proper time, and therefore it has to do with the brachas that Hashem gives us of rain and plentiful produce and all. It's the Birkas Kohanim is mevatel various gzeiros against the Jewish people, and the schus of doing this also does that. And there's a lot of different explanations of what exactly the connection is with Birkas Kohanim. Ben Yoyada brings a point. Each of the psukim of Birkas Kohanim begins with a yud. Yivarechacha, Yoer, and Yisa. Yud spells out as yud vav dalad, which equals 20, which represents keser. We have many places in the Chassidus where Chof represents Keser. So therefore, the three of them represent Keser Torah, Keser Kohuna, and Keser Malchus, all of which we have working together over here to have the Sanhedrin and to have them declare Ibyarin. Okay, so that's one explanation. V'chad Omer, Gimel Keneged Shomer HaSaf, 3 corresponds to the Shomer HaSaf, the people who guard the threshold, which again, at the end of Malachim and at the end of Yirmiyah, when it mentions the Jewish dignitaries who were taken into Golos and taken and executed, it mentions 3 Shomer HaSaf, so we see that they're high-level officials, important enough for Nebuchadnezzar to pay negative attention to them. So, Hei Meroyet Pnei HaMelech. And then you have 5 of those who get to see the king face to face. Zion, Roya, Pnei HaMelech, and then you have a total of 7 who actually are Roya, Pnei HaMelech, who actually see the king's face. Like we find, Rashi explains, we're talking about by Ahasuerus. We have Shiva Sore Parasamadai, Roya, Pnei HaMelech. And of them, you have 5 that are more important and 2 that are less important, which is why, Taka, if you look in the Pesukim at the end of Malachim and at the end of Yirmiyah, one of them mentions 5 Roya Pnei HaMelech and the other one mentions 7 Roya Pnei HaMelech. So why is that? Because there are 5 very important ones and then 2 of lesser importance, as Marsha brings from the Yoshami. 5 of them are actual Dayanim and 2 of them are the Sofer Dayanim, the court reporters. So that's the other explanation of why 3, 5, and 7. Now, Tosfos doesn't like that explanation, though, that we're talking about as far as the 5 and the 7 that would refer to the Sore Parasamodai. Because what do you mean? We're going to make a number of Dayanim for Ibar Hashana based on the way a Goyish king or Rosha had his cabinet set up? No, Tosfos says we are referring to the 5 and 7 from those psukim in Malachim and in Yirmiyah, where you're talking about Jewish officials of the king. So therefore, so it's right that they should make it corresponding to that. The Rambam Mefarshim will point out, I think the Binyan Shlomo points out that after all, the Rishami mentions a point about it, that it does have to correspond to the Goyish courtiers. And the idea is, the fact that we have 3, 5, and 7 Dayanim counteracts the Xeris that those 3, 5, and 7 courtiers make against the Jewish people. So then in that case, it is corresponding to them. But corresponding to them as in the numbers of members of the Sanhedrin who are working on Ibar Hashana are Mevatel their Koyach. So that's another reason why to have 3, 5, and 7. Gemara says Tony Rav Yosef, Rav Yosef also taught a brisa, Hani Gimel Behave Zayin, Gimel Keneged Shemer Asaf, Hei Meroy Pnei HaMelech, Zayin Roy Pnei HaMelech. Rav Yosef teaches a brisa like the second explanation over here, that it corresponds to the number of ministers that are mentioned in various places, either Achashverosh's ministers according to Rashi, or a Jewish king's ministers according to Tosfos. Omalea Baya Rav Yosef, Sambaya asks Rav Yosef when he taught them this Braisa, Ad Ha'idna, my time alay parash lon mar hochi. Up until now, Rebbe, how come you never taught us that? This is the first time we're hearing this. Omalei, so Rav Yosef answers, Loi have your dinner, your diner did tzuchitu. I didn't know that you needed. I didn't know. You didn't know this until now. Has it ever happened that you, Talmidim, have asked me a question and I didn't tell you? So if I had known that you needed to know it, I would have told you long ago. I thought you figured it out on your own already. Because the Rebbe is not supposed to just be spoon-feeding his Talmidim. He teaches them the basics, and they're expected now to be maven dover, matesh dover, and figure out things on their own. So Yosef thought that Abaya had already known this point, and therefore I'm not going to spoon-feed it to you, but you told me. You didn't know it, so therefore I'm telling it to you. The Gemara continues with the Braisa. When we declare an Ibuyar, we can only have people who were invited for the purpose. So the Nasi, Rashi explains, has to have invited them. Oh, so Rashi, by the way, explains as far as this idea, you know, again, Tosfos is objecting, why should we go based on Goyish ministers? Rashi says the vort is that, after all, declaring leap years is something of Malchus Shemayim, so it's right that we model it on Malchus here on earth. So we're Abba the year only with people who were invited for the purpose. So the Nasi has to have invited them from the evening before. So it happened once that Rav Gamliel said, I want you to invite early in the morning, I want there to be seven people should be in the second floor. The second floor of a house in those times, especially a mansion like Rav Gamliel's house, was often a place of public gathering. You'd have like the bedrooms and whatnot would be downstairs, and you'd have like the second floor would be like a big the big public gathering area. You find them in many places in Shas. You find, for example, later in the Masechta, it talks about the Chachamim sitting in the Aliyah of Beis Nitzah and deciding certain halachas. We find in many places, the same in Rav Gamliel, it mentions, for example, that in his Aliyah, he had pictures of the moon in different phases, and he would use them to interrogate the Edim. So there's an idea that in the Aliyah of a house, the Aliyah sometimes you think means an attic, so it means like a hidden room. No, not necessarily. It means more like the living room or something of the house. I want seven people. Hishkim umasaches. He came there in the morning and he found that there were eight. So somebody's uninvited. Now, how did that happen? So there's a number of different explanations. There's a parenthetical note in Rashi, apparently from the compiler of Ein Yaakov, that what Rav Gamliel meant was, I want seven altogether. I'm going to be one of the seven. I want six more over here. And his shamash, or whoever he delegated it to, misunderstood and thought that he should invite seven. Marsha deals with this as well. Again, it can mean seven, and including him. It can also mean actually that he didn't know that his shliach had made a mistake. So now he comes and finds eight. So apparently somebody came uninvited. There's various possibilities that Mephoshim talk about. It could be that Rav Gamliel himself, you know, are we talking about, does the Nasi himself personally need to invite them? In that case, he obviously knows who's there who doesn't belong there. So in that case, then here he's going to say in the Gemara, who is it that came? Shaloi Berushus. So there is an explanation that he Taka knew very well, but didn't want to embarrass the guy publicly. So he had gone the night, so one explanation, the Ran, I think, brings that he had Taka gone the night before, and we had gone around to six of the other Chachamim, and said, I want you to be there tomorrow morning. And now he sees there's a sixth that he had invited, but then there's a seventh one uninvited. But again, the other possibility is that he told his Shamash, or he told the Abbasian or somebody to do it, and that person misunderstood and invited seven when it should have been six. In any case, there was eight there. We can't have eight. Omar, so Rav Gamliel says, Mihu sha'ola shalai berushus. Who is it that came here uninvited? Yeved, he should leave and go downstairs. Omar Shmuel HaKotten, so Shmuel HaKotten got up. Shmuel HaKotten was, we're going to have more about him in the Gemara later on. He was one of the great Chachamim of that generation. We know that in particular it says the Gemara in Brachas mentions when Rav Gamliel needed them needed a new Bracha established in Shemana Esrei against the Minim and Malshinim, then he gave that job to Shmuel HaKotten, and he composed the Bracha of Alam Malshinim. An interesting vote of why he's called Shmuel HaKotan. So it can mean, it could mean, of course, that he was short or something, but there's an explanation that you have Shmuel, you have the great Shmuel, the Navi, and now you have Shmuel HaKotan is almost of that caliber, but not quite. As the Gemara is going to say later on, he would have been Roy to have Nevuah, even if his door was Roy for it, so therefore he's Cotton only relative to the original great Shmuel HaNavi. Okay. Also, he was a great Onav, as we see from this story. So that's another reason he's called a cotton. Anyway, so he stood up for Omar and he says, "Ani hu shalis yisrael b'rishos. I'm the one who came up here without permission. Itaka didn't come up over here to join in the group that's going to be deciding whether it's a leap year. But I wanted to learn halacha l'maisa. I wanted to sit in and observe and see how it's taka done. Was Shmuel HaKotan the one, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, it was not. It was somebody else who was there who shouldn't have been there, but he didn't want to embarrass that person, so he said that it was him. So Rav Gamliel tells him, shave, ni shave, sit, my son, sit. Ru'uyas koloshonim kulin leis abra yodcha. All years deserve to be declared leap years through you. In other words, you're more than qualified to be one of the seven for the job. Ela omru chachamim, ein ma'abra nasashana elabim zmanim la. The fact is that the chachamim said that we can only be ma'abra the year only with people who are invited for the purpose. So again, what is Rav Gamliel implying with that? Is he implying that Shmuel HaKotan is indeed the one who wasn't invited? And it's true, you are taka of the caliber, but the fact is in this case you weren't invited. Or does he mean he knows very well that Shmuel HaKotan is not the one who wasn't invited, and he's just saying you should taka sit over here. You taka deserve to be sitting over here. It really should be somebody else who should be leaving, whoever it is who knows that he wasn't invited. Somehow Shaw discusses the different possibilities that, again, it might even be the whole thing was a misunderstanding, that the Shamash or whoever it was invited seven people, not realizing that it was supposed to have invited only six people. One explanation of this shave beneath shave when he says sit. So the fact is, how are they going to do it? They have to have eight people over there. They don't know. They have to have seven people over there. They can't have eight. So the Yerushalmi, when it brings this story, says, since nobody else stood up and said, you know what, it was me, let me leave, and it obviously wasn't Shmuel HaKotan, so the Yerushalmi says, what Rav Gamliel said, you know what, today we're not going to discuss the matter of Iver. Today we'll sit and learn Torah. We'll sit and learn halachas together. Now, we'll postpone it for the next day. And the next day, he makes sure that whoever's job it is to invite the people, Taka invites only the proper number, Shmuel HaKotan being one of them. So according to that, the shave beneath shave doesn't mean sit here and join in the group. So one possibility of shave beneath... So Moimim is Monim, that's how it has to be.
Moimim is Monim.
Why does it have to be Mizim Monim? I don't know, that's just how it has to be. Bepashtus, because... there's a lot of different considerations that go into deciding whether there's a leap year. First of all, there can be biases involved. The Gemara mentions later on, for example, that a king or a kohen gadol are not allowed to be members of this council because they have particular biases why they might want or not want a leap year. So it could be that the Nasi has reason that he knows among his chavres and Sanhedrin, he knows which ones are going to be more unbiased on it and which ones not. He also knows which ones know the calculations that are necessary for it. The whole thing is called Soid HaIber. It's called a secret. It's not meant to be publicized to the Hamoin Am. Up until, really, we have the Rambam finally wrote it down in Hilchos Kiddush HaChodesh, and therefore we have it all, up until that time, it was Taka kept a secret, so that might be another reason why we don't want Mizamonim. But Pashtus, a reason behind that might be, after all, it's not that easy to have, you're living far away from Yerushalayim or Yavne or wherever the Sanhedrin is at the time. It takes time for the Shluchim to come. You have to keep 2 days Yom Tov, etc. It might be quite a temptation for locals to say, you know what, let's figure it out for ourselves and we'll decide on our own whether it's a leap year or whether it's a, and then the Jewish people will split apart. So therefore, they kept it very hush hush, so that nobody outside of their circle was going to know and try such things. The Gemara does mention, by the way, the Gemara mentions in Chulin, for example, where Shmuel the Amora was a great expert in these calculations, and one time he sends a message to Rabbi Yochanan saying, "I could calculate the calendar for the next 60 years," and Rabbi Yochanan kind of waves it off and says, "Big deal." So the guy knows math, you know. So the fact is, you can't do it in Chutzlar. So yeah. Okay. In later times also, by the way, in the times of the Gaonim, for example, at one point there was an enormous machlokus between Reb Sadia Gaon and Reb Aaron ben Meir, who was the Rosh Hashiva in Eretz Yisrael, about a particular year, what the kviyos of it should be. It actually ended up that there were different kahilas that year that celebrated Pesach 2 days apart because of this tremendous machlokus. So you can see why the Chachamim would want to keep it as closely secret as possible so that you don't have such machlokus and proliferate.
So until then, you have
some of the Gaonim. No, I mean, the calendar as we have it was set up by Hillel Hanasi, 900 years before the Rambam. What we're talking about is the details of all the calculations was not really well known until the Rambam publicized it. Yeah, there were details of it that the Gaonim wrote in their Trovas or whatever, but not like a comprehensive thing, sort of. So it's a lie for Kavod Abrius, Benny Hoyoda finds a way that he could say that you could infer what he said, that doesn't really mean it's not really such a blatant lie, but Pashas he's doing for Kavod Abrius, yeah. So again, so shave beneath shave could mean gesunte hate.
If smaller cotton is going out, it is only...
So that's the problem. Then you're going to have one of the uninvited ones. That's the problem. So that's the thing. So shave beneath shave can mean gesunte hate. You can sit here and observe, and we'll have, you can sit here and observe. Or it can mean sit here, and today we'll talk in Torah, and tomorrow we'll have the actual convocation to decide on Ibn Hashanah. So the Gemara points out, below Shmuel HaKotten HaAvah. Now, in fact, it wasn't Shmuel HaKotten who was the uninvited one. Ela Ina Shachrina, it was somebody else. So Machmas Kisufa who do Ovid. So Shmuel HaKotten only did this to save that other person embarrassment. And he heard Yosef Rebbe. We have an example of that in a later generation, right, of the same kind of thing, of somebody taking blame on himself to avoid embarrassing somebody else. So Yosef Rebbe, one time Rebbe was sitting and teaching his Talmudim, v'kadorish, and he was darshaning, v'hiriach reach shum, and he smelled the smell of garlic on somebody's breath. Omar, and it bothered Rebbe. Omar, so he announces, Misha ochol shum, whoever ate garlic, yetzei, should leave. Omar Reb Chiya v'yotza, so Reb Chiya got up and left. Omdu kulan v'yotzu, and everybody else also got up and left. Now, it can be that, now as the Gemara is going to point out, Reb Chiya was not actually the one who had eaten the garlic. He only did that to spare somebody else embarrassment. So when we say everybody else left would be, in other words, that they all left because they realized, by the same token, if now Reb Chiya leaves and Rebbe still smells the garlic, then somebody else is going to end up being, whoever actually did it is going to end up being embarrassed. So therefore, they all left for the same reason in order to spare that other person embarrassment. And that way he'd leave together with them, and nobody would realize that it was him.
Including the person
who had eaten the garlic, yeah. So on the kul and v'yotzu, so they all left one after the other. B'shacha motzei Reb Shimon b'Rebbe l'Reb Chiya. The next morning, Reb Shimon b'Rebbe met up with Reb Chiya. Amalei says, "After who should see out to la'aba? You're the one who caused my father such hurt that you ate garlic and made him uncomfortable." Omar, so Reb Chiya says, Chas v'shalom, loy tehei kazois v'Yisrael, such a thing should not be among the Jewish people. I would never eat garlic because I know it would bother Rebbe. So I pretended like I had eaten it in order that the other person who actually ate it shouldn't be embarrassed.
But didn't he cause
bittul Torah. So Marsha explains that that's the word. Doesn't Reb Shimon b'Rebbe realize that? Can he realize himself that Reb Chiya did that only to spare the other guy embarrassment? So no. So Marsha explains the vote is as follows. Of course, everybody knew that Reb Chiya hadn't eaten it. What it means is, though, everybody left again because to not embarrass the one who had actually eaten it. So now, when Reb Shimon complains to Reb Chiya and he says, "How could you cause my father such pain?" He doesn't mean the eating garlic. He knows perfectly well Reb Chiya didn't eat the garlic. He means, "How could you cause my father such pain by interrupting the shiur and you didn't?" You realize when you leave, everybody else is going to take an example from you and leave as well. And Reb Chiya answers, I did realize that. But nevertheless, as bad as it is to interrupt the shiur, it's a greater avera to embarrass a fellow yid. So loy tehei kazois v'Yisrael should not happen among the Jewish people that I should cause that a fellow yid should be embarrassed in public, and therefore I wasn't going to do it.
Why did Rebbe say what?
Why didn't Rebbe say what? Because the fact is, it did bother him. It did bother him. I mean, it's the Gemara has an expression in some places that to really teach Torah, to really learn Torah on the highest possible level, you need to have a complete peace of mind. So if garlic bothers Rebbe and distracts him, then it affects the degree that he's going to be able to teach Torah to Samidim. So the Gemara goes on. Reb Chiya Mehecha Gomerla. Now, where did Reb Chiya himself learn that to act that way, to do that, to take the responsibility on himself rather than embarrass a fellow Yid in public? Now, the Gemara could answer he got it from Shmuel HaKatan, but the Gemara wants to find that he found it from somebody from his own generation, or somebody whose life overlapped with his. But wow, we have a lot of one of the explanations about that is Taka. Sometimes you have, you may hear of something that a Talmid Chacham, that a Tzaddik did a couple hundred years ago, and you're going to think to learn from it, but you don't realize that the different times demand different ways of doing things. So not necessarily because somebody did this a few hundred years ago is a reason that you should necessarily follow suit now. You have to see when you have a great Talmid Chacham, as he's going to say, he learns from Reb Meir, whose life overlapped with his, that he does that, then he can learn for himself that this is the proper way to act in our times as well. So Reb Chiya learned it, and also the idea is, in other words, this way, you're not just learning it as something from a book or something. You're really learning it from a real life example that you personally saw of a Talmid Chacham do it this way. So Reb Chiya Mehecha Gomerla Mireb Meir. He learned this kind of thing from Reb Meir. Titania, a certain woman one time came to Reb Meir's Beis Medrash. She says to him, Rebbe, Echad Mikem Kidshani B'Bia. One of you people in this place, Medrash, was Makadish me with Bia. We know that you can be Makadish a woman in one of three ways, Kesef Shtar and Bia. So she's saying there was somebody over here who was Makadish me with Bia, and I'm not sure who it was. Now, that's a pretty sticker thing to do. You're allowed to. It's valid. Al Pi Halacha, but we even find, actually, in the next generation, it says that Rav would give people Malkus if they did that, if they were Makadish B'Bia. You're supposed to be Makadish B'Kesef or B'Shtar. Nowadays, we do it with Kesef exclusively.
You need Aedus.
Huh? You need Aedus. So the Aedus would be that he has the Aedum would be that they saw that he's going to take her into a room and then that's it. They obviously don't see the actual mice. You're saying how? So the Aedum weren't available, or maybe the Aedum themselves didn't remember. I don't know. Maybe to these Aedum, all the Talmid Chacham looked alike. I don't know. Sometimes people Chassidim look alike or whatever. So I don't know. Maybe all of Rameh's Talmidim looked alike to these Aedim. I don't know. It's a good point, but yeah. Okay. In any case, so it's a humiliating thing that somebody should have to come forward and say that he was over on such a thing and did such a pretty thing. Well, Amar Reb Meir, because of La Get Krisus, Reb Meir went and wrote her a get, pretending as though it was him, Venosamon, and gave it to him. Omdu Kosvakulam, Venosamon, each of the other Talmidim followed suit. So no matter which one of them it was, she'll have received a proper get from him. Now she can go and get married properly.
Yeah. All the Talmidim wrote a get.
So each one of them wrote a get, yeah, in case if it was him, then it's him. If it was him, then it's him, etc. Yeah. Listen, there's nothing, it's perfectly possible. I mean, it would be highly unusual, of course. There'd be generally no reason for it, but hypothetically, you can have a man could go and write a get for a woman that's not his wife. It's meaningless, of course, but okay, so one of those gifting is the actual one that takes effect, and the other one are just meaningless pieces of paper. But at least
as if he wasn't there.
We have to assume, I guess, that she knew that all of them were present. I don't know. So Reb Chiya learned from Reb Meir to do that way, that Reb Meir was willing to take on himself and act as though he had done such a pretty sticky thing in order to get somebody else out of a sticky situation. Reb Meir Mehecha Gomerla, in turn, where did Reb Meir learn to do this? Mishmuel HaKatan, from the story we had before with Shmuel HaKatan, where he took on himself and pretended as though he was the one who hadn't been invited. Ushmuel HaKatan Mehecha Gomerla, in turn, where does Shmuel HaKatan learn that that's the right way to do? Mishchanya ben Yechiel. He learns it from someone named Shchanya ben Yechiel in the times of Ezra. So fine, now we're not talking about overlapping generations anymore, but still, Shchanya ben Yechiel is relatively close to his time. Shmuel HaKatan lived around the end of the second Beis Mikdash, and then a little bit past it, maybe, as we'll talk about soon. and Shchanya ben Yechiyahu was at the beginning of the second Beis Hamikdash. So Dichtiv, the Pasuk says, so Ezra comes to Eretz Yisrael, he finds out that there's a big problem, there are Jewish men who've been intermarrying with Goyish of wives, Rahman al-Islam. So the Pasuk says, so what are we going to do about it? Vayan Shchanya ben Yechiyahu mibnei Elam, so Shchanya ben Yechiyahu from the family of Elam spoke up by Yomel Ezra, and he says to Ezra, Anachnu ma'alnu ve'lekenu, we have been disloyal to Hashem, v'noshev noshem nochris, and we've married foreign women from the surrounding nations. But now, yesh mikvah Israel alzois, there's still hope for the Jewish people. Get together, bate dinim, and make the people divorce their wives. And then Ezra went ahead and did just that. Now, so Shechaniah is saying we acted disloyally. Now, at the end of that perek, after it describes what Ezra did to take care of the matter, the psukim give a list of all the men who had taken married these goyish wives and now did tshuva and divorced them. Shechaniah ben Yechiyahu was not on the list. So you see that he's saying we did wrongly, including himself among the ones who had done wrongly, even though he hadn't done anything wrong. So that's therefore. So now Shmuel HaKatan learns from that to do a similar kind of thing. In turn, where does Shechaniah learn that this is the right thing to do? He learns from Yoshua. He learns from the story involving Yoshua. You have the story in Sefer Yoshua where after they had conquered and destroyed Yericho, Yoshua had made a cherem, nobody's allowed to take any of the spoils of Yericho, a fellow named Ochon took some of them, and the next battle that the Jewish people fought, they were defeated. We have a whole piece about it later on in Ar Masechta about the details of it. Anyway, so Yoshua and some Jews were killed in the next battle, so Yeshua is all worried what's going to be. We're going to end up losing to the Canaanim, and Hashem tells him, Vayem Hashem al Yeshua kumloch, get yourself up, lamazat, and nofel aponecha, why are you falling on your face? What are you davening for? Chotei Yisrael, the Jewish people have sinned, and you need to take care of the matter. So at that point, Yeshua says to Hashem, Ribbono shel Olam, mi chotah? What do you mean you're telling me the Jewish people sinned? Who specifically? Hashem tells him, what do you think, I'm a Baal Lashon Hara? Go make a Goro and you'll find out. And later on, in fact, in the Masechta, it talks about the details of the story, what happened. So we see, in other words, Hashem is just talking and just saying, instead of telling him outright who's the sinner, he includes everybody in it. Another possibility is we can learn from Moshe. Dichtiv, where you have people went out on Shabbos to collect mon, and Hashem says to Moshe, Ad onam me'am tem, how long will you, plural, refuse to listen to the Eibishter? Meaning, in other words, again, it was only a few people, and it wasn't Moshe Rabbeinu himself, so, but yet Hashem is including all of them and talking as though all of them are guilty. Again, in order not to single out the ones who acted wrongly.
He's not mentioning Tamar.
So he's not mentioning what?
Tomo said better.
Tomo, yeah, that's something else. I mean, that's not. Yeah, I suppose there is that. I don't know. Okay. Marsha points out another reason why we have to say that. So we were talking before, why is it that we have to say that each one has to learn from the other one? So again, we talked about you have to learn from somebody closer to your generation. Yon Yaakov makes a similar point that the generations get less and less, so therefore you need in each generation, you need somebody closer to your time to show that this is tackled the proper way to do it. But Marsha explains like this. With each one of these things, with each one of these stories, there could be a reason, there could be a svara to argue the other way around. Don't act in front of everybody else as though you're the sinner. Let alone to include other people and make them act like they acted improperly. So, but now when Hashem says to Yeshua, Chotei Yisrael, or Hashem tells Moshe, Ad Ona Me'antem, we can learn from that Hashem doesn't consider it improper to include the innocent together with the guilty. And he'll say in general, Me'antem, or Chotei Yisrael, the collectively. So therefore, Shechaniah can learn from that the same way it's right for a person to consider himself among the choitim in order to spare everybody else. So this way, Shechaniah can say, "Anachnu ma'al nevelakenu," even though he personally is not guilty. But then we go on that. So now we could say Shmuel HaKotan has to learn from Shechaniah, because once he sees, in other words, you could have Shechaniah might not have done that. Shechaniah might have taken the view, maybe that's not right, the right thing to do. Maybe we should call out explicitly the ones who did wrong and not include myself with it. Well, then Shmuel HaKotan would have learned from that you shouldn't do that way. But now now he can learn from Shechaniah. In the same way, each time there's a svara to say that you shouldn't learn, there's a svara by each one to say why you shouldn't learn from the previous one, and nevertheless he did. Therefore, the Gemara tells it like that, that each one learned from the previous one rather than saying they can all trace it back to Moshe or Yeshua. So the Gemara continues, speaking of Shmuel HaKatan, Tana Rabbanan, Mishim Mesu Nevi'im HaChronim, after the last of the Nevi'im passed away, named Chagas Chayim Malachi, Nistalka Ruach HaKodesh Mi'Yisrael, Ruach HaKodesh, Nevuah, disappeared from among the Jewish people. V'afrikan hoi mishtamshim baskol. Nevertheless, the Chacham was still able to use a baskol. Mephoshim talk about why it's called baskol, which literally means a daughter of a voice. Literally, the word baskol sometimes in the Gemara means an echo. So it means, in other words, it's like an echo of Nevuah. It's not the actual Nevuah itself. There's an explanation that there's different explanations of why exactly it's called Basco, but that's the idea. In other words, it's like a weaker version of it. It's a weaker version of Nevuah. So Pamach, so Yisubin, Baalias Beis Guria Berichai. One time, the Chachamim were reclining at a meal in the Aliyah in the second floor of Beis Guria in Yerichai. Here's another example where Aliyah doesn't mean an attic or something like that. It means the second floor where, like, they'd have the main dining room or something. So the Chachamim were all sitting there and reclining at a meal. Tosfos points out this point about Baskol meaning an echo, that it means that it means, in other words, like you have an echo of the original voice. Anyway. So they're all sitting at this meal, the Nosnale and Baskol and Hashemayim, and they heard a Baskol that came from heaven. Yeshkan Echad Shadroy Shatisha Olav Shina Kamosh Rabbeinu. There was one person in this group who deserves that the Shina should rest on him like Moshe Rabbeinu. To the extent Moshe is the greatest Navi of all time. Nobody of Loikom Navi Abisro Kamosha. But in other words, that he should at least have a semblance of Moshe's Nevuah. Elashain Dirta Zaka Lakach, but his generation is not worthy of it, and therefore he's not having Nevuah. Who was that? Nosno Chacham Mekanein beHillel HaZaken. The Chacham put their eye, the Chacham gazed over at Hillel HaZaken. They realized that must be who the Baskol is referring to. Marsha points out he has a lot of things in common with Moshe. Like Moshe, Hillel lived 120 years. Like Moshe, he led the Jewish people for the last 40 years of his life. He was also, like Moshe, a tremendous Anav. If there's anybody in this gathering who deserves to have the Shina rest on him, like Moshe Rabbeinu, they realize it must be Hillel. When Hillel passed away, Omru Olav, they said on him a hesped, Hey Chosid, Hey Onav, where is the Chosid, where is the Onav, Talmud Shel Ezra, the Talmud of Ezra. Why are they calling him like Ezra? So the Gemara explains in Sukkah, Marashah, before we say it over here, the Gemara tells us that when the Jewish people were forgetting Torah in Eretz Yisrael, the beginning of the second base of Mikdash, then Ezra came from Babel and reestablished it. Later on, they were again forgetting the Torah, and Hillel came from Babel and reestablished it strongly in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, he's very much like a successor of Ezra in that sense. They both came from Babel, and they both strengthened and reestablished the knowledge of Torah in Eretz Yisrael. Another time, years later, the Chachamim were again at a banquet in an upper floor in Yavna. The Nosnale and Baskol and Hashemayim, and again a Baskol came and announced on them from Shemayim. Yeshkan Echad Shadroy Shatisha Olav Shechina. There is one person among you who deserves that the Shechina should rest on him. Elashain Dirta Zaka Lakach, but his generation is not worthy of it. Bechlal, there's the idea. For example, Moshe mentions to the Jewish people, Rashi brings it in Parshas Zvarim, the whole reason why Hashem speaks to me is only for your sake. We find during the 38 years, for example, after the Chet HaMenaglim, that Hashem did not speak to Moshe with the same closeness as he did before. We had that in Bava Basra a few weeks back, for example. You have other examples of that where in order for a generation to have Nevuah, it's not enough that there's somebody who's of the caliber of being a Navi. The dur has to be roy for it as well. So you have somebody Elashain Dirta Zaka Lakach, Nosno Chamas Hanem B'Shmuel HaKatan. The Chum looked over at Shmuel HaKatan and realized he's the one the Baskol is referring to. And when he passed away, Omer Olav, they said a similar hesped on him. Hey Chosid, Hey Onav, Talmidei Shel Hillel. He's the continuator of Hillel, as in he's an Onav like Hillel. Marsha points out by him, it doesn't say that the Shadroi Shetisha Olav Shchina Kamoshe Rabbeinu. Shmuel HaKotten is already not of the caliber of Moshe, or anywhere near it, and he didn't live 120 years, and he didn't lead the Jewish people for 40 years, etc. But in terms of Anivos, he at least can be compared to Hillel. And the Gemara continues with another point of Shmuel HaKotan's own Ruach HaKodesh. Afu Omer B'Shas Misasei. He said before he passed away, Shimon V'Yishmol L'Charva. Shimon and Yishmol will be put to death by the sword. The Pashtos means of Shimon Gamliel and of Yishmol, the first two of the Asar Arugim Malchus. The Chavroi L'Ktola, their colleagues are going to be killed in various other ways. For example, Rav Akiva, Rav Chaninim and Tradian are going to be killed in various other ways. They were all among Asar Arugim Malchus. Ushar Amal Aviza, the rest of the people are going to be plundered by the Goyim. Many terrible troubles are going to come on the world, on the Jewish people. On the face of it, he's talking about the events that are going to happen at the time of the Churban. We usually understand that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol were killed at the time of the Churban. Various sforim point out certain problems with that. Among them, we talked about before that Shmuel HaKotan was the one who composed Birkas Aminim, and the Gemara tells us in Brachas that he did that in Yavne. And where and when was the Sanhedrin in Yavne? After the Churban, not before it. So then in that case, it would mean that he lived after the Churban, so what is he predicting? Before he passed away, things are going to happen at the time of the Churban. So there's that. There's a lot of other back and forth about that. There are explanations that the Reb Shimon and the Reb Shmuel, who he's talking about, are actually a later Reb Shimon and a later Reb Shmuel. Reb Shmuel would be the chaver of Reb Akiva, Reb Shmuel ben Elisha. Reb Shimon would be Reb Shimon ben Asgan, and it's referring to they were killed at the time during the Shmad in the years after the war of Bar Kochba, which is also when Reb Akiva and Reb Chanani ben Shadyan and the rest of them were killed. And in that case, he would have outlived the Churban, and he's talking a couple of decades before all of that. So the Gemara finishes off. While Yehuda ben Bava bikshu lo makein, when Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava was passed away, actually we're going to have later on in the Gemara, he was also one of the Asar Arugim Malchus. The Gemara is going to tell the whole story here in Ein Yaakov in a few days about what happened to him. Anyway, when he passed away, when he was killed, bikshu lo makein, they wanted to say similar hesped hey chosid hey onav elish nitru fasha, but the time was confused. They weren't able to gather the people together to make a hesped like that. Shein maspidin al Arugim Malchus. They don't make a hesped for people who are killed by the government, as Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava was. Rashi explains because they're afraid of the government, so they have to just get the body and bury it as soon as possible. They don't have time for a spadim and all the other things like that. So therefore, they didn't have a chance to say such a hesped about him. Yom Yom Mashiach Ge'ula, Yud Aleph Ida. We're talking about Nezirus. This was a sicha from Nosse Nun Aleph. So talking about Nezirus, which is in that parasha, the full kedusha of Nezirus will exist for Osid Lava. When, as the Rambam says, the Jewish people will be pinuyim b'Torah of Chomasa, will be free to work on to learn the Chochma of Torah, and the whole occupation of the world will only be to know Hashem. So now there won't be like this. You have one aspect of Nezirus is separating oneself from Tivus of the world. Now the Osid Lava that ever says that won't be necessary. Every person will be kodesh l'Hashem. And the point of Nezirus will be something far higher than that. Continuing with halachas of tzitzis, we were talking about various cases where the strings broke, where how many strings are broken, and it'll be kosher, and how many not. And we talked about that you have to have kedei aniva, you have to have enough to make a slip knot out of it for it to be kosher. So again, the Alter Rebbe had been talking about when you have the two different sides of the knot versus one side, whether these are the ends of one of the longer strings or two of the other ones. So then the Alter Rebbe goes on to say that yesh omenin, that tzitzis are not going to be kosher unless you have not just kedei aniva, but you have two complete threads of 12 gudlim of two complete ones of the original long ones. Because that would be the amount of chote lovan of the white strings back when we had trelis. So now we have four strings, all white, because we don't have trelis, but nevertheless, so fine. So to make up for the trelis, then it's enough to have strings that are broken and have kedei aniva. But at least you have to have two complete strings from the original one that are the full length. So then, according to that way of looking at it, so here, according to the first opinion, the Alter Rebbe had said that you could conceivably have that five or more of the strings are snapped, and you only have kedei aniva from them, and they can still be kosher, depending on how exactly the tzitzis were made. But according to this way of looking at it, even if three of the eight strings were snapped, and you have kedei aniva, it would still be possible because you still might have that of the ones that are broken, they might not be from the original one long string, each one might be from a different one, and so you don't have two of the original strings intact anymore. So then if you have two strings broken, according to that, then it would be kosher. But if you don't have kedei aniva, then it would also be an issue. Like this, you know, we typically learn as kids that if you have one out of the eight is broken all the way down to the knot, then it's still fine. But if it's two or more, it's a problem. So here the author goes into some detail about that, according to the different opinions, when it might be kosher, even if two of them are snapped, and when not. And again, part of it depends on how the tzitzis were made to begin with, whether you were careful to keep all the ends on one side or not. So minhag ha'olam is to be machmir like the second svara, which is why we usually have that if more than one is snapped, then you have a problem. B'shas ha'dchak, then you can be soimach on the svara rishona, because that's the ikker, and then you could get away with partially broken tzitzis, but then you should still get them repaired as soon as possible.